Siding Unlimited, named the best window installers, not just here, but in the whole USA. Get the best. Siding Unlimited, 5-time winner as America's best window installer. For windows you call Siding Unlimited, first and directly, SidingUnlimited.com.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios in downtown Milwaukee, it's Wisconsin's Midday News, making stories come to life. Now, here are your hosts, Greg Matzik and Jessica Tye.
Friday edition of Wisconsin's Midday News. Greg and Jessica with you till 3 o'clock. And an early start time for the Bucks here, 5 o'clock. Our coverage begins here on WTMJ.
And now it's time for three big things on Wisconsin's Midday News.
Number one. Changes could be coming in the midst of the gambling scandal that's rocked the NBA in its opening week. Dozens of defendants connected to the NBA and the mafia accused of rigging poker games and sports bets. ESPN's senior NBA insider Sham Sharania on the needs for sport betting reform.
There's going to be changes to the gambling structures with sports books. There's already been conversations, from my understanding, that the league has had with the different sportsbook entities across the country and how they can help minimize situations like this so this does not become commonplace.
Wire fraud and money laundering are among the allegations in the indictments. Former Bucks guard Damon Jones, current Miami Heat guard Terry Rozier, and Portland Trail Blazers head coach Chauncey Billups are among those who were arrested. We'll dive into what exactly the former Bucks player is accused of doing and the cheating technology that was allegedly used in those poker games coming up at 1:15.
A retail giant nearing final approval for a store in Franklin. Costco looking to build a 162,000-square-foot building and gas station on the northwest corner of Drexel and 27th Street. The Franklin Plan Commission recommended approval for all outstanding development items, including a rezoning request, a conditional use permit, and a planned development overlay. If the plan gets by the Common Council, construction could begin in early of 2026. Number of locations in Waukesha County. We've got Menominee Falls and Pewaukee. It's about equal distance from our house. There's one in New Berlin, another planned for Oconomowoc. But this would be the first ever Costco in Milwaukee County.
Yeah, that's a big deal. Number three, for the first time in 5 years, the American Heart Association has revised its guidelines for CPR. The new recommendations reflect a troubling reality.
The original CPR guidelines, issued in the 1960s, focused on chest compression and mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. While that technique has been refined over the years, this is the first time the Heart Association has offered ways of recognizing opioid overdose and how to administer naloxone to reverse its effects.
ABC's Jim Ryan reporting there. There's also new guidance on what to do when someone is choking. A local physician will join us coming up at 1:45 to walk us through all of the new information. It's information that could save a life.
Federal charges filed in the NBA's illegal gambling probe. We will dive into it with Peter Haralambos. All the details you need after this. Well, Indiana Pacers head coach Rick Carlisle called it a shocking day. Miami Heat guard Terry Rozier indicted as part of an investigation into insider sports betting. Former league MVP and Portland Trail Blazers head coach Chauncey Billups part of a separate investigation into what law enforcement officials are calling a mafia-organized rig poker game, and many of them. Former Bucks guard Damon Jones also arrested providing insider information. We welcome in ABC's investigative reporter Peter Haralambos. Peter, let's start with the charges here. Billups and Rozier making their initial court appearances on Thursday. What were the federal charges handed down?
Yeah, so this is really a sprawling case, and we're dealing with specifically charges of wire fraud, conspiracy, and money laundering. These are kind of serious charges, and the allegations themselves are looking like they're going to be a real challenge to defend, in particular because it's such a sprawling case where you might actually have people pleading guilty and cooperating with the government, all of that making harder for them to eventually fight off this case if it goes to trial.
So I'm looking at the indictment right now, and it's just, I mean, this is, I feel like this is another story this week that feels like it could just be ripped from the movies. United States of America against, it lists the names, and it says, also known as Spanish G, another man known as Flapper Poker, another one known as The Spook, Juice, Black Tony, and Sugar. It goes on and on and on. When you dive into these poker games that were rigged, can you explain the technology that they were using? Because this is some high-tech stuff.
Yeah, I mean, even if this case related to some no-name average shows that you've never heard of, no celebrities, it would still be ripped out of the pages of a Hollywood movie just because this technology is so wild. And then on top of that, you do have these NBA players. You have a dozen members of the New York Mafia. So the technology specifically that they used, they had an array of things. So they had these X-ray poker tables where it would basically tell you who had the winning hand. They had special lenses that could read kind of hidden messages on cards. They had rigged card shuffling machines, which basically predetermined the outcome of these games. And as these, as this game went on, basically the information from those tools basically would be sent remotely to someone who was in a completely different area. That person would then text someone who was at the table, telling them basically, okay, this person has a hand that's going to win. And that person then would use old school techniques such as hand signals to kind of tell the other people who are in on the game who is going to win. All of that helping net more than $7 million. All of that, especially when you consider the fact that these are at times really wealthy players. You know, we're talking about Chauncey Billups, a very well played man. You're talking about Damon Jones, another person who's made a ton of the money in their lives, you know, participating in these schemes to make allegedly just an extra buck.
I mean, it reminds me of a scene out of Ocean's 11, right? You've got Topher Grace playing poker with some people from Hollywood who want to be near a celebrity. Well, it's kind of the same idea here. People are drawn to the athletes. They want to play with them. They think it's kind of cool. There's some cachet there. And ultimately, it's rigged. They end up losing tons of money, and not everybody wants to pay. They feel like they're caught up in some sort of scheme here. What happened? I didn't lose all this money legally. But it's also a bad idea to get into those situations with the mafia who resorted to violence, Peter. That's another angle to this story.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned it because that's exactly right. So the mafia was involved in you know, paying people like Billups and like Jones to attract people to these games. And then when people couldn't pay because they'd been scammed, they used violence to actually get the money out of them. According to prosecutors, this was described by people inside the scheme. These players, these people who would attract and legitimize these games, were called their face cards, and the victims of these schemes were called fish. And basically, these games happened across the country. We're talking about the Hamptons, New York, Miami, Las Vegas, and basically just used these high-profile individuals. As you said, it's cool to play a game with a well-known athlete, with a well-known coach, to lure people into this scam. They would get scammed out of their money because they had no shot of winning the game. And then when they couldn't pay, they were extorted with violence.
When it comes to that mafia connection, how involved was the mob? Were they just enforcing debts, or were they running this whole show? Allegedly,
they were basically. They were basically running this show from start to end. They were paying people like Billups and like Jones to attract people to these games. They were helping run the games, and then when they couldn't get their money from these people, they would use violence. And it involves, at this point, at least 13 mafia members, according to prosecutors. Those were among the people indicted yesterday from three different crime families. We're talking about the Bonanos, the Gambinos, the Genovese. These are, you know, heavy-hitting mafia members in New York who allegedly participated in this and profited from this. And it really just raises the specter. Coming back to this idea that this is like straight out of the movie, you know, the combination of the technology, the NBA stars, and then these mafia members, you know, you could not make up a more compelling kind of crime here.
The Rozier case is not as sophisticated, but it is interesting. You can go back to 2023, March of 2023, Terry Rozier had no props bet listed all day at the sports books. He was never listed on an injury report. All of a sudden, his prop bets get listed late. There's a slew of activity around this mildly obscure player in the NBA. Everybody bets the under. He plays the first quarter and mysteriously comes up with some sort of foot injury. Surely nothing shady going on there, Peter. And I'm sure you've seen it on social media. You can search Terry Rozier's name, and there is clip after clip from a particular game where he looks like the worst basketball player in the NBA, just throwing passes to nobody, dribbling off his knee, throwing the ball out of bounds. Like, it is so bad, it's obvious.
Yeah, it's really just remarkable. And we know specific games where this allegedly happened. March 23rd, 2023, he was playing at the time for the Charlotte Hornets, and he basically told his friend, hey, I'm not going to finish this game. I'm going to fake an injury. And that friend then placed a bet that he was going to perform, and that bet yielded $200,000. Similar thing happened again, where he kind of notified someone else that other members on the Blazers would sit out on a game with the Chicago Bulls. And all of this kind of being done on these, you know, on these public sports books, something that you and I would bet on if we just wanted to put a few dollars on a game, was being manipulated with inside information. And beyond that, just kind of making the entire thing unfair, it's remarkable because, you know, yes, sports betting is legal in the United States and most states. But in this case, there's a huge paper trail here, and it's really easy in a way to identify when there's something irregular happening. As you said, you know, someone who has no prop bets suddenly having a lot of money put on them, that is suspicious. There is a trail of activity that prosecutors can identify, and even though it's no longer being done under the table through a bookie, you know, there are still ways to manipulate this, and there are, if anything, a much bigger array of evidence that could be used to prove a case like this.
Yeah, in these cases, and I know we're talking about two separate schemes here, really, but one of the games has a Milwaukee connection. It was a Bucks-Lakers game back in February of 2023. A tipster allegedly told a co-conspirator, get a big bet in Milwaukee tonight before the information is out, referencing information that wasn't public, Peter, about a very high-profile player, LeBron James.
In terms of how high profile we're talking about Damon Jones, someone who's been associated with the Lakers for a long time, a friend, a teammate of LeBron James, basically knowing that LeBron James was going to not be playing in a particular game, and then sharing that information. We're talking about some of the biggest stars now in the NBA. If in this case, LeBron was not aware of this, but still, this knowledge about his game, his medical status, being used to place inside bets, really casts a huge shadow in a way on the entire NBA, because you're talking about multiple people, multiple stars, and even if the biggest stars aren't necessarily implicated, they're still being used as part of this scheme to make money and cheat the entire market.
I imagine when these guys begin in the league, they sit down and the coaches tell them, hey, don't get involved in stuff like gambling. What do you think this case tells us about the growing overlap between pro sports, gambling, and organized crime right now?
Yeah, I think it just really validates the idea that this kind of stuff happens, even though I think, commonly speaking, people think that sports betting is fully kind of above board and legalized. There are still kind of nefarious things that happen, and to the extent that people kind of speculate, the mafia is not around as it used to. They don't exist in a force in society like they do kind of in the old mafia movies. That's not necessarily true either. The mafia still exists, especially here in New York, and still has an influence on things. And they're creative, coming up with new ways to make money. And in this case, they're using top-line technology, those X-rays, those fancy glasses, those machines to shuffle cards, to certainly come out with millions of dollars. So I think at the end of the day, this is kind of a warning shot across the NBA. Certainly players and coaches will be kind of on notice that this kind of stuff is being enforced, and they'll be on the lookout for it in a way that, you know, theoretically creates deterrence.
Well, yeah, the sports books caught the irregular activity on Rozier the day that it happened. He didn't play the rest of the year, and many in the NBA believe that the NBA pulled him. It wasn't an injury, that the NBA caught wind of it and was like, nope, you are done for the rest of the year. That'll be an interesting story to follow as well. ABC's Peter Haralambos. We appreciate it, Peter. Thank you.
Thanks, Peter.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, sun is shining today. Cool temperatures. Did Brian Dusnansky take the sheet off of his mums this morning? So many questions. Niz joins us from TMJ4, our chief meteorologist. Hey, Niz.
Yeah, what's up, guys? I went out last night when I got home from work and took my own advice. And I'm like, you know what? I want some of these flowers to keep going for at least through Halloween. So covered them up. They seem to be in okay shape this morning. They survived the night. But, yeah, much of the area dipping below freezing.
I'm curious about those temps because I thought, since I'm downtown, closer to the lake, I thought that I might be okay. Because weren't we looking at by the lake? Wasn't it like 35 or 34 was going to be the low initially?
Yeah.
So that's what I was thinking. But just in case, I went ahead and I plucked the peppers off to make the hot sauce. And then I pulled in a couple of plants that I just didn't want to worry about just in case. And I thought I was being maybe overly cautious. But then, and I know you'd probably say, don't do this, Jessica. But I did ask Siri when I woke up. And Siri said it was 32 in Milwaukee. And so I said, ooh.
Yeah. Right. And that was at the airport. So the low temperature officially going to go down as a freezing temperature in Milwaukee. But the airport, I mean, it's close, relatively close. But if you are downtown and, like, probably within, like, a half a mile of the lake, most of the readings that I saw were around 34, 35. I have an observer who's in North Bay and Racine, which kind of sticks out on the lake a little bit. He was at 34. In Grafton, I got down to 33, and I'm right off 43. So I'm like a mile from the lake. So it was close. It's close enough. But even if you do only fall to 34 degrees, you can certainly still have frost. What happens then is your official reading is technically at like 4 feet from the ground. But if you are like right on the ground, especially come wintertime when the ground is actually frozen, it can be colder than that. So you get frost to develop on some of those surfaces, especially like the grass, your plants, maybe even your car tends to get a little bit colder than the surrounding air as well. So certainly frost possible.
So remind us, once we actually hit that for certain communities, once we hit 32 or lower, do you keep reminding people, or is that like, okay, we had our freeze, so we don't need to tell you that every single time?
That's a great question. I think last night, since it was close enough, we'll probably continue to remind, and I'll have to check with the National Weather Service, but you're exactly right. Like, if we get, like, a widespread killing freeze across all of southeastern Wisconsin, they'll just stop issuing the frost advisories and freeze warnings, because then we're technically done. You know, we're done with the growing season. But I could see that being the case for certainly our inland counties, because our inland counties definitely were freezing and below last night. Maybe Lakeshore counties, the weather service keeps it going for a little bit longer, especially because it's still October. Now, if we were into November and like literally like say goodbye to all your plants, like at that point, stop trying at that point, then I can see for sure, like just kind of letting it be from here on out.
Mums are still thriving. Is grass still growing, Niz? I mean, today's a pretty nice day. Sun is out and you get through the evening and got yourself a pleasant October day right now.
Yeah, I did a cut this morning. I want the lawn looking good for trick-or-treat tomorrow, nice and tight. And, yeah, I mean, it greened up. We had a decent amount of rain this last week, and grass is growing fine. There are certain things that, you know, can withstand, like, you know, hardiness of, like, a small freeze. You know, it takes a while, like mums especially. Most mums, as long as you're treating them properly, that's the reason why it's mum season, it's fall, because they can withstand like these, you know, minor freezes. They can do just fine. Your other plants that, you know, were thriving in summer, not so much. But grass and mums, yeah, it can hang on here for a little bit longer.
Does the Niznanski household do full candy bars for the kids and Fireball for the adult trick-or-treaters?
Maybe the Fireball, not the full candy bars. I was shocked at, you know, the pricing of Halloween, you know, candy. I mean, I know it's so 2025. Everything's expensive, and I get that, and it is. But, like, candy, it was noticeably higher this year. Like, I thought, like, holy cow. Like,
those cocoa prices. Got to blame it on that.
Yeah, I know. It was nuts. No, I don't do full-size candy bars. But I do, you know, let the kids be a little – I'm not a stickler. If they want to grab a couple, they can go for it.
Good stuff, Niz. Hey, enjoy Halloween weekend here a little bit early. Trick-or-treating for you. Ours is actually on the 31st, so holding out for a good forecast that day, too. We'll check it again soon.
Have a great weekend.
Will do, guys. Yeah, watch out for a small chance of showers tomorrow afternoon, but it's probably before trick-or-treat time, guys.
Okay. Oh, good.
Good to know. Appreciate it,
okay,
Niz.
Guys, see ya.
143 and WTMJ. Coming up next, new guidelines here from the CPR. They don't often change the rules here on what you should do and what you shouldn't. But some very interesting information released earlier this week by the American Heart Association. We'll go through it after this. Well, this doesn't happen terribly often, but new this week, updated CPR guidelines tackled choking response, opioid-related emergencies, and a revised chain of survival. Some interesting information, and this was unexpected, according to our friends from the American Heart Association. Wanted to welcome back to the studio Dr. Chris Ford, emergency medicine physician for Ascension. Dr. Ford, welcome back.
Good afternoon, guys. Thanks for having me.
Did you know this was coming?
None of us knew, but we found out on Wednesday, so it's good. A lot of the changes here are right on, and you know, the goal is to help everyday people, you know, tackle those life-saving steps that when seconds count.
I kind of feel like this one item reflects a troubling trend, but it's needed. And I'm glad that the American Heart Association is making tweaks. The guidelines provide a new algorithm for treating individuals with suspected opioid overdose. What do people need to know now?
Yeah, so, you know, it goes with the trend, like you're saying, you know, opioid abuse, substance abuse disorder. We're seeing it more and more in patients. And fortunately, here in the city of Milwaukee and the county, we're seeing a reduction in the amount of deaths in the last several years by about 30%. And a lot of that has to do with measurements like this, right? Taking measures to make Narcan available in the communities, make sure people know what an opioid overdose looks like. And so this algorithm really reflects that. And so what we take a look is, you know, if you have someone who has slow breathing, is unresponsive, blue lips, things like that, then this guideline really walks you through how to use that naloxone and when to use it, because, you know, the risks, you know, are way less than the benefits of administering that Narcan in the moment.
I am out of date. Like, I look at this and I say, whoa, that what I was taught to do way back when, I think it was part of college, is no longer permissible. I mean, you don't want to be pushing on the chest that hard on a young one. I remember doing finger sweep, tilt the head, all that kind of stuff. Guidelines change for a reason. What is the reason behind some of the changes made with regard to choking infants?
Yeah, so, you know, with regards to choking infants, we wanted to make sure that we gelled with the recommendations from the American Association of Pediatrics. So a lot of these algorithms go hand in hand with their algorithm, and they've adopted those as well with the American Heart Association. And so ultimately, we wanted to standardize it between age groups. And so what we're seeing is we're alternating between back blows and abdominal thrusts in children, but in infants, we're just doing those back blows, right? And so a lot of that has to do with that evidence-based data that we were able to, you know, acquire since 2020 when those guidelines were last changed. And we're seeing improvement in, you know, mortality rates as well as morbidity rates, meaning, you know, kids aren't as sick if you're doing these maneuvers and getting them to a higher level of care.
I've heard a couple of stories lately about people choking. One, it was a mother who was trying to help her son who was choking. And it's an incredibly scary situation. Luckily, it all worked out. My husband, probably about 8 months ago, all of a sudden in the kitchen, was like choking. And at first I'm like, are you okay? And then all of a sudden I'm like, gosh, I don't think he's okay. And he's a big guy and I'm kind of small. So all of a sudden I thought, gosh, if there was a really bad situation, like, could I make this work? I bring this up because there are right now, and I just went on during the commercial break, went on to Amazon, and you can go and you can find these anti-choking devices now. And I almost was thinking after the experience that we had in the kitchen that, gosh, maybe I should get one of these. And I know that the mother who had the experience with her son bought one as well. But I do see here from the American Heart Association that the use of anti-choking devices is not supported by the guidelines at this time. Can you give us some knowledge into that?
Yeah, a lot of it has to do with the fact that some of these devices are novel devices, right? So these are devices that have been shown sometimes in lab studies to have worked, you know, on test dummies, things of that nature, but they haven't really been rigorously, you know, interpreted on the grand scheme, right? So we're not able to reproduce it in some of those long-term studies, and those studies haven't been done yet, right? And so ultimately what we have to do is, you know, with this era of falling back on evidence-based medicine, we're going to have to go with what we know. And these methods and these techniques that we use, we know work in adults and in pediatric patients. And so we usually will tell people to reach for that first, reach for those, you know, those known techniques versus to do something novel that they may not have had experience with using in the first place or in the moment or reading, you know, watching a YouTube video or something like that to see how it works.
Dr. Chris Ford joining us here in studio on Wisconsin's Midday News. There was a legislation discussed earlier this week, Dr. Ford, that would require Wisconsin public schools to have a cardiac emergency response plan for school-related events, right? Could be during the school day, athletic competition, recitals, really anything tied to that school. This is public schools. That includes CPR training, AED installation. You talked about every second is important when you have this kind of situation present itself to you. How critical is something like this? I know it's not to get in the weeds of politics, but it's an idea that could help potentially save a life, and they're trying to get it in at the schools.
Yeah. So every second counts, right? So as an emergency physician, I can tell you those seconds and minutes all add up, and that really will be the determination between, you know, an outcome that's beneficial for the patient and an adverse outcome. What we've seen, especially with this legislation, as well as prior legislation that aims to target the same thing in the instance of the albuterol inhalers that were placed in schools that, you know, nurses can reach for and administer to kids who they think are having an asthma attack, it's more so to reduce that time frame between, you know, the kid having that exacerbation or kid having that cardiac arrest and, you know, doing something, putting hands on the chest, providing them a method that they can breathe, right? And so it all goes to these are things that we're doing in the seconds when seconds and minutes count. And it's something that communities get behind because, you know, we're doing this youth empowerment, we're doing this community empowerment to say, you know, you can take those measures and save a life in that moment.
Something else I took note of is reverting to a single chain of survival for all forms of cardiac arrest. So whether we're talking about an adult or a kid in or out of the hospital. And I kind of liked this because I feel like it just makes it easier for people, easier for people to remember, easier for people to do. What is that updated chain of survival?
Yeah. And so more so, again, this is just trying to make sure people get hands on the chest as soon as possible, make sure they're activating that chain as soon as possible. So initially, it's just that recognition that something is going on, that this patient could be coding, this patient could have a heart condition. We're recommending high quality CPR, looking for someone to get that defibrillator if it's available in that area, and then pass that measurement. You know, once EMS gets there, you know, then we can kick into that advanced resuscitation where they can administer medications, they can do an advanced airway, things of that nature, and then it goes into post cardiac arrest techniques as well as that recovery process afterwards. But it's more so putting the people in the community at the forefront of this, saying that if you start these measurements too, you're on the team, right? We're all working together to make sure that we have a good outcome.
CPR training, pretty easy to find to get that certification?
Pretty easy to find. You know, one of the measurements that the American Heart Association is doing now is to do that media campaign, right? So if you go online, you know, wherever you guys get your media, right? If you go on social media, there's an AHA page, right? If you go on the 620 website, I'm sure there'll probably be one too, right? But there, if you look around, you know, they're often at gyms, they're often at, you know, community centers, churches, things of that nature. The American Heart Association has made it very clear in these updates that they want to make sure that they do that outreach so that it's made more available for people.
Great information. Dr. Chris Ford joining us here in studio, emergency medicine physician at Ascension Hospital. We appreciate it, Dr.
Thanks
Ford.
So
thank
much.
You.
Absolutely.
155 here on WTMJ. Wisconsin's Midday News Podcast is built by Siding Unlimited. First hour, 2 hours, we'll call it. Already podcasted. Gina's got it up there for you. Take us with you wherever you go. Built by Siding Unlimited. It's the Wisconsin's Midday News Podcast.